Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, May 12th, 2022. Lots of background noise there. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is still 2022, Melody. Happy National Limerick Day. And happy Nutty Fudge Day. And happy National Odometer Day.
Oh, boy. Can't live without those, can we?
Well, I'm telling you.
Because what I want to know is, who are these people that make this up? Don't they have anything better? And I wonder what their income is. Don't they have anything better to do?
They certainly don't. And I'm sure they're making a lot of money.
I'm sure. I'm sure they are.
Yes,
and,
they are.
Probably a politician of sorts, but anyway, let's go ahead and get into the markets today. You have gold today, another pullback in gold, a stronger dollar. We're going to talk a little bit about that briefly. Gold was down $30 right now in the New York spot price aftermarket at 1823. Silver's down 88 cents at $20.78. That was down over 4%. Platinum was down over 5%. At 948, palladium was down 6% at 1,980. So the metals kind of got hammered along with the paper markets in the beginning, although the working group at the financial markets, they did their job today. But you got the dollar up 0.82, popped over 104, moving on to 105, currently 104.83. We're just going to talk a little bit about that because the dollar has too many, a strong dollar really has too many disadvantages, but they need it to continue what they're doing. So they need people buying their debt. They need a stronger dollar, but in the long run, government really wants inflation. And they do want a weaker currency, but seems confusing. And it's like, well, how can they? I think they believe they can control everything, and that's what they're doing. So they're trying to anyway. The Dow was down over 500 points at one time, and you know, again, the plunge protection team, kudos to them. The Dow is only down 108 at 31,730. S&P is down 5 at 3,930. And, hey, they managed the NASDAQ to be up 6 points. Woo-hoo! 11,370. All across Asia was all negative overnight. Europe was negative overnight. So I guess we fared better than most. The bond market, the 10-year yield, that fell 2.873 is the 10-year yield, falling 0.04%. So oil today, well, that was the only thing that was positive across the board. You have Brent. It wasn't up 1%, but it's at 108. Natural gas, again, that wasn't up 1%. That's 7.70, but it was positive all the way across the board. And you know what, Dave? I just wanted to make a – let me see if I can pull something up here. You know, we're going to talk again a little bit about inflation. The producer price index was up huge today. But, you know, people get confused with the dollar and, you know, against the dollar, gold doesn't do well. We hammered it. But you have to look at the long-term trend and the fundamentals of gold and the fundamentals of the dollar. What is making it stronger? We're going to touch a little bit on that tomorrow. But there's an interesting fact. When the dollar is stronger, that means imports are actually cheaper. So, but then if imports are cheaper and you can get your trinkets at a little bit lesser price, that would heat up the market, I would think, Dave. Wouldn't you think so? But
other things being equal.
So as the dollar continues to strengthen, the price of imports will continue to fall, making things a little bit less. So we'll see if that has any impact here on their inflation numbers for next month. I don't know if it would, but the disadvantages also, I mean, there's a lot of other ones, but I'm picking out the ones that I think are important. Your exporters, things that are made in the U.S., hey, we suffer. That suffers. And so our products become more expensive abroad. So yep. That's not good.
Yeah, the question then becomes, are we a net exporter or a net importer, which has, in the context of the dollar strength, has serious ramifications.
Mm-hmm. And the U.S. companies that are conducting business abroad, they're also hurt. So, I mean, it doesn't, you know, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong. A stronger dollar is just basically all about needing people to buy the dollar, buying treasuries. That's what I believe it's all about. And that allows government to have the debt, the money that they need in order to do what they need to do, like sending another $40 billion overseas and doing things that... That's how I see it. That is their, they need to strengthen the dollar in order to have, they need to sell it.
Yep.
So we have a couple days fall back in gold, but the long-term trend, ladies and gentlemen, couldn't be any stronger than what it is. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about cryptos later on in the program. And yesterday there was a Senate Banking Committee, and I'll hold this for when we get to that. And Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was there for the annual report to Congress. And consumer prices for goods and services rose 8.3% from a year ago. That's down a little bit in March, but still indicative of the worst inflation the U.S. has really seen since the 1980s. And it affects us in our gas, our groceries, our everyday living, our energy. You're continuing to see those rise also. We all know about auto prices, used vehicles, but, you know, we don't use those every day. We don't have to have those to live. We saw a little bit of the gasoline index fell during a month when prices at the pump eased just a little bit, but that trend reversed and certainly has gone high. Yesterday's CPI data included a number that was quite shocking, but it really didn't wasn't exactly surprising to anyone. Airfares, they rose 18.6% in April, the most on record for a single month. And that accounts for about a quarter of the overall surge in core inflation last month. A challenge with interpreting inflation data is determine what to look through as a mere one-time adjustment and when to show more alarm. So the experience of last year shows the risks of being too willing to brush off high inflation just because one or two categories are disproportionately responsible, but you just can't brush it off. Let's see if there's anything else we need to do. Jobless claims, it's Thursday. A separate economic report today shows that jobless claims totaled 203,000 for the month ending May 7th. Now, this is just a modest increase of 1,000 from the previous week, but everyone was expecting 194,000. Now, the four-week average for claims, and that kind of evens out some of the weekly ups and downs, that rose 4,200 from the previous week. So it fell a little bit. The total number of Americans collecting jobless benefits for the week fell by 44,000 from the previous week. And this is the fewest since January of 1970. And I think that's pretty much it there for that kind of information. Bureau of Labor Statistics reported that the U.S. employers posted a record 11.5 million job openings in March. An unprecedented 1.9 job openings for every person who is unemployed. So there shouldn't be anybody in this country that's unemployed and collecting benefits. A record 4.5 million Americans quit their jobs in March. It's supposed to be a sign that they're confident that they can find better pay or better working conditions elsewhere. Let's see. Now, this is interesting, and I mentioned the other day that we didn't know why the baby formula was having a shortage. Well, since then, we knew that the Abbott Labs was shut down in Michigan, Sturgis, Michigan. And, of course, this has prompted a severe shortage of the formulas, Similac, Alimentum, and Elicare. Now, they also said that it's looking to restart the plant in as little as 2 weeks, but they said it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks to get formula products back on the store shelves once production gets going again. So now this plant, it's like there's just one plant. Just one plant. The plant was shut down in February pending a federal investigation into the deaths of two infants and reports of illnesses among other children who consumed a certain baby formula. So the plant was closed. In a statement, Abbott said that subject to Food and Drug Administration approval, it could start the Sturgis site within 2 weeks. But Abbott said from the time it brings the facility back online, it would take 6 to 8 weeks before products made it to the shelves. And again, it just kind of makes you wonder, this is, we're supposed to be the best nation in this country. You expect a plant like Abbott Labs to be shut down if it was like in a place like China. You don't expect that there was, you know, something going on, the conditions of the plant. Where's the quality control? And yet, hey, mothers out there, you know, we've been, you know, you have to look around, see what you can do. Hey, we didn't have baby formula when we were kids, and we're all right. We made it. So I've already seen tons of recipes that show that you can feed your baby with, you know, people that your grandmother and your great grandmother did. But here again, here we are, a country that we're supposed to have the best of everything, and we can't even provide baby formula. Doesn't that tell you? 43% of normal supplies of formula were out of stock in grocery stores in the first week of May. Well, we're in the second week of May now. The shortage, I'm going to repeat this, and my apologies for the technical problems today. The shortage has led to calls for Washington to act. Expediting, let's import more stuff from China. Hey, our dollar is strong, so it's going to benefit them. So it's like, are you serious? It's also granting case-by-case waivers to allow the sale of life-sustaining supplies of specialty and metabolic formulas. Abbott said there was no evidence linking its formulas to the infant's illnesses, but at least one pathogen linked to a linked to the children in, I don't even know how to say it, Chronobacter, sounds like some sort of a dinosaur, was found in an environmental testing as part of the FDA's investigation. And, you know, the story goes on and goes on. So my point is, it's a big sign of exactly the condition of our nation anymore. We can't even supply baby food. We have to import more from overseas, from China. That should really upset a lot of people. And 1-800-375-4188. We're going to hit an early break until we get our issues worked out. I appreciate your patience, ladies and gentlemen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Talking away,
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And we had some, we're having some weird technical issues coming from Dave's part, and we can't figure it out. We couldn't figure it out during the break, so we're going to try to continue, but if it can starts back up, we will just break out, and you will hear the replay from Tuesday. So we can't figure that out, what's going on, but there's been tons of rain and so forth, and sometimes that can affect connections and, you know, the wirings, and who knows what it could be in this world of great technology. And so with that, if you hear us back out, and we're going to try to make it work, Dave, but so we're going to start out with mortgage rates. They have surpassed 5%. Low mortgage rates made buying in the seller's market, of course, very affordable. Median home sales values in the Philly region, that's where you live, have cooled slightly. They were only up 2.3% year over year, but, you know, hey, costs a little bit more now to borrow because that money is more expensive. We saw home prices 15% increase at the end of 2021. And so, you know, already fatigued buyers could be priced out, or they're just going to try to go deeper in debt, trying to get in before things go higher and higher. We don't know. And if you had taken out a $200,000 30-year mortgage loan in April of 2021, your monthly principal and interest would be around $840, Dave.
Well, yeah, and on that $200,000 loan in April 2022, it would be $1,100. That's $260 more a month, over $3,100 a year, and over $93,000 more over the life of your loan. So certainly the recent surge in mortgage rates has snuffed out last year's massive refinancing boom. Some say it's showing that the Fed's efforts to raise interest rates is already starting to bite. The New York Fed's quarterly report on consumer debt and credit showed a sharp drop in mortgage refinancing activity. Those are the loans that fell 15% to $424 billion in the first quarter. They're actually down 40%, the refi loan originations from first quarter last year. That's when, it peaked. That boom peaked a quarter later last year in the second, when 30-year fixed mortgage rates rose to around 3%. So, perhaps we're not calling this a bubble just yet. There's plenty of other reasons for different bubbles that we're seeing today, but it can't be good, especially with mortgage rates expecting to continue rising the rest of this year, Melody.
Well, you know, it's amazing when you think about just that increase in rates, you're paying an extra $100,000 for your home.
Yeah, how about it?
When homes are already over, and that's at a $200,000 home. Well, we know the median is, what, $450?
$429, yep.
So you're looking at $200,000 more. I would, you know, just double it. So that's a lot. But you know what? But you know, and when we used to pay, you know, 13% and 10%, homes were a nice home was $80,000. So, you know, you weren't paying, I mean, all things are relative because, of course, when you were buying $80,000 homes, you weren't making the wages that you were making today. But, you know, thank you, inflation and everything else. So One of the interesting stories that are going on is the crypto markets. We saw Bitcoin fall below 26,000 for the first time in 16 months amid a broader sell-off in cryptocurrencies. That's about $200 billion that was erased in a single day. Could have been worse. The price of Bitcoin plunged as low as 25,919. That marks the first time the crypto had sunk below the 27,000 level since late December of 2020. So Ether, the second biggest digital currency, tanked to as low as 1,700 per coin. It's the first time the token has fallen beneath the 2,000 mark since July of 2021 and was last down 11% at 1936. So we're seeing people flee the cryptos when the stock markets plunged from the highs of back on the pandemic, you know, since the pandemic on fears. There's a whole lot more to it, Dave, and I've been reading about stable coins. And, you know, it's interesting because I never paid any much attention to this. I had no desire to learn about the language and the stable coins and to see how it's tagged to the dollar and how it's supposed to mirror the value of the dollar, but it's plummeted to less than 30 cents. That was Terra USD or UST, plummeted to less than 30 cents yesterday. I mean, if these companies go belly up, everything goes. It's because there's nothing there. And I was reading about some of these companies, and they don't have to prove anything what they have in the background or what they are tied to. And supposedly, and everything, because they're not public companies, all that stuff is private. They don't have to release any information as far as who are the backers and what do they have. It's totally, you have no idea what the backing of this stuff is and who it is. And people are just, people flooded in these cryptocurrencies thinking and bought the line tag. It's a safe haven, the best thing since popcorn, and you're going to make millions and billions of dollars. But heaven forbid, don't forget your passcode and, you know, try to get your money out of there, and everything is probably a little more difficult than, you know, most things that a lot of people have to deal with. And, you know, maybe the younger generation can maybe maneuver it a little bit better. But for the people who, but they don't have a lot of money. It's the older folks that have more money and the institutional buyers. And that's what pushed it up. Hey, if Elon Musk would put $1.5 billion in gold, where do you think that gold price would be? But you don't hear him commenting anymore on where his crypto investment is. He can afford to lose $1.5 billion because that's like him losing $1,000. And
well,
that's
look,
a fact.
What's happening in the crypto market yesterday and today, to me, proves two things. First, as you mentioned, and this is the most important, Bitcoin, Ether, all the other cryptocurrencies out there are not a safe haven. Let me repeat that one more time, ladies and gentlemen. They are not a safe haven. If anything, we've seen crypto prices go up and down primarily with the stock, with the U.S. stock markets. And you know what that means this year. They've gone down pretty substantially. And second, and this is just as important, if you want to speculate, you got to be prepared to take a big hit. It's why it's so important that you understand an investment, be it the nature of gold, silver, platinum, palladium, a company you're thinking of buying their stock, a treasury bond, a certain treasury bond with a certain maturity. Do your research. Call us at 1-800-375-4188. we'll tell you the differences and the pros and cons. You can make the decision. It probably speaks for itself. But do not, please, please do not be tricked by anyone who's out there saying, these are risky times. Put your money into cryptocurrencies.
That's only, nothing.
only put as much as you think you can stand to lose.
That's why you use disposable income, money that you can afford to lose. But you know what? It's just, I mean, it's nothing. That's what it just baffles me. Why would you invest in something that is nothing? It's not real. It's probably one of the biggest Ponzi schemes that ever was created. Now you're going to have governments. I mean, in that thing yesterday, they have the supposedly the working group of financial markets in there that are going to be investigating and doing some research on these stable coins and how it threatens the financial stability. Well, they wait until something happens until they do that. Well, why don't they come out with these reports before it happens? You know, but hey, they all get rich on it too. They get rich, you don't. And that's the problem. Even the derivative markets. Hey, was she asked about the derivative markets? Heck no, not once. And you're looking at $234 trillion in notional money, notional derivatives, face amount derivatives, sitting on the books of mega banks. That would get bailed out every time. And it's so big, Dave. I mean, it boggles the mind when all of these creative type investments just to keep and taking people's money. Because they can't live on, you know, it's
on their $500,000 a year bonuses.
You know, when I lived in Arizona, you know how many times I've heard someone said, I'm going to go to Las Vegas and triple my money. And they'd come back and they had to hitchhike back because they lost it all. You know, because they were, you know, thinking they had problems, they had financial problems, that they would go and they would bet and they would gamble. This is no different. Wall Street is no different. It's for them. It's for the wealthy. It's for the multi-coat. It's for everyone but you. And all of your retirement accounts are there. All your financial, you know, it's just. And hey. They might be able to turn everything around and the stock market will go up 1,000 points and, oh, you'll see this and everybody go, whew, I'm glad I didn't sell and so forth and whatnot. But one of those times, it's not going to and it will continue to plummet. And there's too many things going on and I'm going back to the baby formula. Are you kidding me? How safe can you be when this nation can't produce baby formula? I mean, that kind of, for me, puts it all into perspective to some degree. You know, corporate debt, corporate bonds, let me bring my violin out. They've been having a tough year. The route has been difficult to stomach with the high yield bond funds. They've returned a negative 10% since in the new year. Investment grade funds are down 13%. But you got some people out there that say, oh yeah, but you know, hey, corporate yields are actually rising in a pretty orderly fashion. Okay. The lowest quality risky corporate bonds haven't sold off disproportionately compared to the safer ones. And just remember, when we talk about bonds and so forth, as bond prices go down, yields go up. As yields go up, bond prices go down. During the last two periods of market indigestion from the Fed tightening, 2016, 2018, the gap between the riskiest CCC and BBB bonds was much wider, often at double digits compared to around 6 percentage points now, Dave. And it's the same thing for the period of the economic stress that we saw in 2007. and in 2020. So we all know the bond markets are in trouble, Dave.
Yeah, how about it? You know, one of the Wall Streeters noticed this. It's always been bad when you take the liquidity out. And the size of the balance sheet, that is, the Fed's balance sheet, is enormous. Of course, we now know it's more than doubled last couple of years to $8.9 trillion since the beginning of the pandemic. The bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, the recent rise in yields is the result of a move toward tighter money. Broadly speaking, I guess you could say it's what the Fed is aiming for. But the next test for these credit markets is going to be if cooling economic growth starts to impact corporate earnings in the next couple of quarters. We will see.
We will see. So 1-800-375-4188. I guess this is a good sign. Price of lumber is falling again and still expensive. You have to define what is falling and, you know, where it was. Lumber now costs $802 per thousand board feet. This is according to the CME. Last year it was $1,600, and it was just a month ago, a couple months ago, it was $1,500. So I guess the industry adjusted to the higher prices, but just as rising mortgage rates are slightly easing demand for new housing, so maybe that could be more of the supply side. The lumber industry kind of figured it out. Dave, you think?
Yeah, time will tell. I hate to sound cliche-like, but, I mean, we know on the demand side, more than half of home builders said higher mortgage rates are impacting their business. Some said buyers are rushing to lock in rates before they go higher. However, others are pointing to declining foot traffic to new homes. So this, I mean, I guess you take the good with the bad. We just don't know to what extent this seemingly good news of lower lumber prices is and how long it will last.
Well, you know, I've been reading a lot about diesel and, you know, we don't realize until things get, when everything's are going good, we don't think about anything. It's just good and we're happy and so forth. But when things turn and reverse and you look not only these truckers, but everything that uses diesel, you don't think about the farmers. You don't think about so many of these, you know, mom and pop and independent companies where diesel is used. And I never really thought about it until I started reading articles about it. And the diesel, and I remember when I was young, Dave, diesel was always cheaper.
Yeah, right.
It was always cheaper. And I hear the music, so we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of clients this final segment. You may call her at 1-800-375-4188. Hopefully, our technical issues, our audio issues of the first segment are behind us. There is some extraneous background noise coming from outside my home studio today. So sorry about that. Hope it's not too distracting. Well, look, Bloomberg's Joe Wiesenthal, who I like to quote, and discuss some of his articles, writes this morning that if you take a financial risk and it pays off, you might just want to take another one. And if that pays off, then you might take an even bigger risk the next time, and so on and so on. And finally, if the riskiest bets pay off, then you might start thinking you're a genius and take on way more risk than you ought to be. There's a way to make sense of the trajectory of the market in the 2010s, post-Great Recession, through the lens of greater and greater risk-taking. The bull market went on, and every bet seemed to pay off. Sure, there were dips along the way, but they were usually V-shaped dips, in the equities anyway. Then we got the mother of all V-shaped dips in the spring of 2020 when policymakers were able to stop the recession almost instantly, at least according to the government. I think we saw that the jobs side of the economy continued to be affected for a much longer period. And so after a decade of bull market, investors realized that recessions could be stopped in their tracks, or at least that's what they thought. And risk-taking went wild to the point where people were pouring money into profitless SPACs, tokens named after dogs and cats, digital drawings of monkeys, and, yes, algorithmic stablecoins promising 20% payouts. It was the natural culmination of a decade-long bull run. Now, the Fed's raising rates, and the meme stuff and crypto and growth stuff is getting crushed the hardest. The question, I guess, is why? What's the big deal if the Fed fund rate goes from 0 to 0.8% or 2.5% or whatever? How does that change the value of Terra or a digital ape? Of course, the Fed funds rate alone actually doesn't matter. What matters is that the big risk-taking cycle appears to be doing a 180. And the rate hikes, while important, were only a part of it. A point that Mark Dow has made for years is that there isn't some mechanical or mathematical link between speculative activity and the Fed funds rate. people kind of imagine that you cut rates and everything jumps and then raise rates and everything goes down. It's not that simple. I mean, during the dot-com bubble, Fed funds was around 5%. What's more, the Fed started hiking again in 2004, but the housing boom just kept going. In fact, a lot of the worst housing assets were created deep in the hiking cycle, around 2006, when the Fed had brought rates back up to 5%. Of course, as we know now, the market eventually turned and the housing boom crushed. But the point is that it wasn't a mechanical function of higher rates. Higher rates were just one contributing factor, ultimately, that caused the risk cycle to move in the other direction. So why is the super risky stuff cratering now? Basically, because it went up a lot, because it represented the pinnacle of risk appetite. And now that's reversing. And unlike the last 10 or so years, when it was clear that the Fed or fiscal policymakers in Congress could easily boost the economy when it started to flag, there isn't an equivalent easy solution to deal with this high inflation. It's not easy to stop inflation dead in its tracks, you know, like you can do with a recession, supposedly. So in any event, as Wiesenthal says, the terrain going forward looks super, super rocky. Sure, the rate hikes are one factor contributing to the slowdown we're going to see. The bigger story, though, is the turn of a cycle that fueled more than a decade of risk that's coming home to roost. Too big to fail banks and other out of control Wall Streeters, not to mention the Fed, have just not learned the lessons of the late 2000s and appear destined to lead all of us into another abyss. This one will be harder to dig out of. Prepare now, ladies and gentlemen, for all your gold and silver needs. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Now, speaking of economics, specifically the economics of parenthood, the number of childcare workers is still down by 11% compared to pre-pandemic levels. According to the BLS, there are about 938,000 workers in the child caregiving industry today, compared to about 1,050,000 or so in January 2020. BLS says the median wage for a child care worker is a mere $13.22 an hour. That is a couple of dollars more than in 2019, but is still not nearly competitive with other industries paying a lot more in this ultra-tight labor market. And that means a lot of parents are having a hard time finding child care, which keeps them, typically mothers, either out of the workforce or working less than they'd like to. Now, this is the part of the larger group of Americans that aren't included in the government's headline U3 unemployment numbers, but are part of the higher U6 rate that Melody and I talk about all the time. The lack of access to quality child care is certainly a problem that predates the pandemic, but it's not looking any better right now. Hey, if you missed this yesterday, or the other day, I should say, Lisa Cook, an econ professor at Michigan State University, won Senate confirmation to serve a term on the Federal Reserve Board. The vote makes her the first black woman to serve there in the Fed's 109-year history. Cook will join the Fed as it faces a monumental challenge of reining in 40-year high inflation. That's straining household budgets and sapping the president's approval rating without undercutting a strong labor market or sending the world's largest economy into recession, which remains to be seen. Senate Banking Committee Chair Sherrod Brown of Ohio called Cook's confirmation historic. Not a single Republican supported her. And the Banking Committee's top Republican, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, said he feared she would not be tough enough on inflation. Vice President Kamala Harris cast the tie-breaking vote in the evenly divided Senate, making the final tally 51-50. Cook's term will run to January 2024. Atlanta Fed Prez Rafael Bostic said, "This is great. Lisa was a student of mine. She's a fantastic economist and will bring a welcome voice." Cook, who will help set U.S. monetary policy with the rest of the seven-member board and heads of the 12 regional Fed banks, is not expected to change its current trajectory. Cook was an advisor on the transition teams for both Biden-Harris and Obama-Biden administrations. "Deep expertise makes her exceptionally qualified to serve," said Michelle Holder, who heads the Washington Center for Equitable Growth. The Senate last month confirmed Fed Governor Lyle Brainard as the Fed's vice chair, with several Republicans joining Democrats to confirm her. Two other nominees to the Fed, Jerome Powell, renominated to his current position as chair. In fact, I think I just saw a blurb that said Powell has been confirmed this afternoon. Not quite sure if there's been a vote yet for Davidson College Dean of Faculty, Philip Jefferson, who also has bipartisan support. Now, drawing a lot of attention around the world, Finland's President Sauli Niinistö and Prime Minister Sanna Marin said today that the country, Finland, should apply to join NATO without delay. The announcement is the strongest sign yet that Finland will make a formal application to join NATO any day. Membership would be historic for the Nordic country, which has a decades-long policy of military neutrality. The two leaders said in a joint statement, "NATO membership would strengthen Finland's security, and that Finland's membership would in turn strengthen the entire defense alliance." The Finnish government will debate the issue over the weekend, as the parliament there is expected to give its final approval to the application as early as Monday. President Niinistö, said Putin's invasion had changed Finland's security situation, although he didn't believe there was an immediate threat. Soon after Finland's announcement, fellow Nordic country Denmark said it would push for the quick admission of Finland. Now, there is a risk the move from Helsinki could spark aggression, further aggression from Russia, where Putin has expressed his opposition to NATO's enlargement on numerous occasions. Finland shares an 830-mile border with Russia. If it joins the military alliance, the land border that Russia shares with NATO territories would roughly double. Mm-hmm. He's now talking about a catastrophic accidental mistake that could result. Russia has land borders with 14 countries, and five of them are NATO members: Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, Poland, and Norway. Seeing another article come up about that, as expected, Russia has indeed slammed Finland's plan to apply to join NATO, claiming it would be forced to retaliate, Russia, that is, if the long neutral country joined the military alliance. Finland joining NATO is a radical change in the country's foreign policy, according to Russia's foreign ministry. In a statement, it said Russia will be forced to take retaliatory steps, both of a military technical nature and other actions, in order to stop threats to its national security arising. Again, membership would be historic for the Nordic company after just decades of neutrality. Russia's invasion of Ukraine on February 24th has shifted countries like Finland and Sweden's calculus on NATO membership, with Sweden also seriously considering an application to join the alliance. There are fears that further expansion of NATO, one of Putin's biggest pet peeves, could prompt an aggressive response from Russia. As such, if Finland does end up joining the military alliance, which appears it will, that the 830-mile land border that Russia shares again would roughly double. Russia's foreign ministry claims that the goal of NATO, whose member countries vigorously convinced the Finnish side that there was no alternative to membership in the alliance, is clear: to continue expanding towards the borders of Russia to create another flank for a military threat to our country. Russia has insisted that Finland's policy of military non-alignment served as the basis for stability in Northern Europe, but that now Helsinki must be aware of the responsibility and consequences of such a move. More fighting words, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Finland didn't join NATO when it was founded, I think, what, in 1949? And its public has, until now anyway, largely supported its neutrality, primarily to maintain peaceful relations with Russia. In fact, it signed a peace treaty with the Soviet Union in 1947 and a further so-called friendship treaty in 1992 to build upon this policy of neutrality. In recent years, however, Finland and Sweden have both grown closer to NATO, taking part in some operations and some missions led by the alliance. Russia said that Finland joining NATO would violate the 1947 treaty, which it said provides for the obligation of the parties not to enter into alliances or participate in coalitions directed against one of them. And oh, by the way, North Korea fired three more missiles. I think they were shorter or intermediate range continental ballistic missiles, but ones that could reach as far away as the U.S. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, especially on a crazy day like today. And to you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the